47.
46.
Just checking. Episode 46, season 5.
I've got to do it, mate. It's standard protocol.
All right. Series 5, 46.
And we are here with guest host tonight, Mr. Dave
Elwood, I say. So Elwood, I won't tell your surname.
From Elwood Enterprises. Nice to have Dave back. You've been on a couple of times. You've
couple
done
times, yeah.
Special with Rob.
Yep, especially with Rob. And I was on episode 4 of the series 1.
He's one of the originals.
One of the originals.
I like that. It's good to get the originals back. And who have we got on tonight? We have
Mark.
Bobby Tachippi.
Bobby Tachippi on Instagram.
Or Mark Bobby, as
Mark
his name.
Mark Bobby, as he said in my phone, yeah.
In Dave's phone. And we've also got
Fred.
From?
Walter Strong.
Walter Strong. And Walter what Strong. Did Walter Strong do, just for everybody listening or watching on the podcast?
So specialist tapes and adhesives.
Specialist tapes and adhesives. So it's good to have actually somebody on from a brand, because it's very difficult to get brands on. But don't know why. Maybe it's my teeth or my aftershave. But it's always nice to have a brand on. And I'm going to start actually with you tonight. Reason being, just nice to talk about the brand, how it got started, why it went into tapes and adhesives, you know, why it didn't go into something else, if there's somebody's background that was in that. And just sort of give us a backstory about what you do in the business, and just sort of talk people through about, like, you know, why somebody should use your product as well. So just give us a grand overall scheme of things.
Okay.
And we'll start with the backstory first. So a bit of backstory for the company, owners, like how we got started, and, you know, how you got into the adhesive game, because it's quite competitive from what I can tell out there.
It's big. It's a big market.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different industries. So you've got the industrial side, and you've got the construction side, and then you've got DIY, all sorts of different things. Yeah. So industry.
Which is your main focus for you? Because there's always, like, our niche as Unilight is tradesmen and women. So it's trades. Mm. Like, we sell to engineers and rail engineers and highway construction and stuff like that. But ours is our forte.
Boots on the ground trade is going in commercial and residential works. Yeah.
The guy in the white van, right. You know, that's where it started. There's actually two sides to Wolfstrong. The Matty side, which is much more industry. So modular home builders and those sort of people that have a production line.
Yeah.
Much more specific or niche or formulated for them.
Okay.
But the builder, we love the builder. Yeah. So I probably need to explain a real quick deep dive back into how it all started.
Yeah.
Because that gives quite a colour or flavour to how we think today.
Yeah.
But very quickly then, so when I left school, I was a scaffolder.
Yeah.
So on the site, you can see common problems. And
I wouldn't put you down if I was going to say any trade.
No, I was just about to say.
Because you look at scaffolders,
you look at
the
knuckles, they're not dragging on the ground.
And he's smartly dressed.
You can see the hole in the shoulder. Yeah. no, that was actually a really good experience, because it taught you how to work for a start. I was meant to be doing a business studies retake.
Were you reliable, though?
Well, this is the get-out clause here. I was meant to be doing business studies retake up a second-story building, and I hated it so much. I used to jump out onto the back of the truck, hop in the front, and say, right, let's go scaffolding for the day. And it was good money, about £300. That was 25 years ago.
Okay.
So, good fun. Anyway, that came to quite an abrupt end. A good friend of mine was killed behind the truck, and it put a bit of reality into life. Right. And thought, wow, I've got some lessons to learn here. So, you're always glad of tough times, actually.
Was that the works truck as well?
That was the works truck, yeah.
Wow.
So that was quite hard at that age. And I'm not sorry for it, though I'm sorry for the family.
Yeah. How old were you at this time?
I was 17. So, it's quite an impact, especially a guy that you knew well and worked with.
Mm.
And he was a good guy. Played the guitar, taught us how to play the guitar, a few things. He's just a great guy. So lots of lessons. Puts life into perspective.
A lot to deal with that age.
Yeah, it's a lot to deal with. And I actually feel more sorry for his family, because he had his younger brother was the same age as me.
Right.
So it was tough. But probably not a bad thing at that age. Put things into perspective.
It does.
So I had a very nice older brother. I'm one of seven. I've got two older brothers. And he said, right, you come with me. You're going to come and work for us. And he'd just started his business. If you ever heard of Timberlock screws, and they go through oak sleepers. He had just been in America and come back and said, this is for us. Come on, we're going to do this. And I was like, no, I haven't got a clue about this. You know, get me a drill and a screw. And I'm like, yeah, which end, you know?
Yeah.
So after a bit of training, went to America and Argyle, Massachusetts, brilliant bunch of people. Always had a bit of a passion for America, and I'll tell you that bit in a mo. But we started off selling to the builder and explaining what it would do, save time, problem solving, quicker, easier, faster, simpler, stronger, sort of those sort of principles. But when the builder used to say, right, I want to buy it, we say, well, I ain't selling to you. We've got to sell, where'd you buy your timber from? And that's how the merchant distribution started working. A little triangle, it was us, the end user, and the merchant. Put them in touch with each other. I used to love it. So that was about 10 years of that, more like 12 years. And I could see that my older brother's boys were coming into the business. And I thought, well, do you know what? They're going to have this. So I moved, got married, would you believe it, moved up to Norfolk. And they were down in Maidstone and met a guy that was a chemist doing food adhesives. So, you know your cereal box.
It sounds like a Breaking Bad.
I was about to say, this is where the story goes south. Yeah.
And I met the chemist.
Yeah. You might want to be careful about what you're saying.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
He's still a snitch. You've got to watch.
Is he?
Right, okay. He's still a snitch.
I'll move my chair. And it was actually really interesting because the same problems within one construction industry were the same in industries like food processing. You got the same problems. How do you make it quicker? How do you make it faster? How do you make it stronger? Those sort of things. Anyway, interesting story. There's actually a company not far from here, Two Sisters Food Group. They produce own brand for Asda, Tesco's, but like a Kellogg's.
Big company, though.
Do you know them? Two Sisters, yeah. Ranjit Bhupran, very, very interesting guy. He did $3 billion last year. So, sizable company.
Just chickens as well.
Yeah, that's it, in Thetford, Yeah, lovely. Oh, everyone in that factory is about 25 stone. It's like Kentucky for
breakfast.
That's
like a prerequisite.
Yeah.
23, sorry.
Well, mate. They all start about 16.
Yeah.
So if you know a cereal box, right, you've got two flaps on top, you've got a bead of glue along. That was actually becoming an issue because people were putting their hands inside the box and taking the adhesive off the packaging into the cereals and eating it. Right. Taking Two Sisters Food Group for £50,000, £60,000, £70,000 litigation. For I've got resin and wax and polymer in my stomach. That should never be in your food. And suing them.
Who's eating cereal straight out of the box?
You'll be amazed. My kids still do it. Don't worry.
Especially when it was Frosties or something. Like
just pour the milk into the packet.
I was terrible for eating like dried Frosties and stuff. Yeah.
My boy still do it. Straight in there. But so he was getting all these issues and we had a long conversation about it and we made a food edible version. So if they ate it, it wouldn't cause any issues. Twice the price, but you use half as much. So everyone won. Business grew and got to a point where we thought, right, we're going to get out of this, sell it while we can. So there I was, a new construction, a new adhesives, didn't have anything to do. So what would you do? Yeah. So you probably know the Professional Builder magazine.
Yeah.
Okay. So we did a little questionnaire in there and just said, what is the tape you use? What's the most popular tape you use? What's the most popular application? What do you like and what don't you like? It was that simple. And we got 3,000 replies. We're like, what do we do with all this? And it was just deciphering it down as the most popular. And the first product was, find me a duct tape that doesn't leave residue. I mean, really?
You would have thought that would have been.
Don't tell me that's not been thought of. But when people go into a room like this and they're redecorating, they put that Corex sheeting down, they'll tape it to the floor.
Yeah.
2 days later, they pull it up. And it's got that residue on it. They buy white spirit, clean it. We're like, what's the purpose of that? Surely we can make a tape. So if you know adhesive, if you know the carrier, we just get the right two together. Bam, we've got a product. Really simple. And that's how it grew.
Yeah.
Go back to the contractor and find out what their problems are and try and solve them.
Yeah.
And that is basically what we do today.
Yeah. And that's why you made the scrim tape that actually stays where you put it.
Yeah. And you can see it.
Yeah, I mean, I've used some of your products, and the scrim tape is really good. I will say it's genuinely really, really good because that was one of my pet hates.
Yeah.
It's just as you start troweling up, just as you start skimming, and the scrim starts peeling down on your ass.
Yeah. I mean, just for anybody then, Dave, because obviously if you've used the product, like, which product is it that you've used? And, like, just give somebody why.
So I've used two of the products. I've used the scrim, which I like the fact that you've got different sizes and stuff as well.
Cool.
And I think since you guys did that, I hadn't seen that before with the different sizes. So the 75mm and the 100mm.
Yeah.
Since you guys have started doing it, I've seen other people doing it. which often, you know, means that you're onto something.
Yeah. If your imitation's the biggest form.
Well,
that's
it. Means you're onto something.
Pisses you off.
You know all about that.
you have to take it sometimes.
And the other one I was actually using most recently was the liquid mask,
which is
really good because I've just done a renovation on my old man's place and part of the thing was he wanted to paint all the crappy 25-year-old UPVC windows in the house. And the reason he wanted to do that was because the front windows were changed, the back ones weren't. They've been there since, like, they've been in the house 30 years.
Yeah.
I think the back ones have been in 25. Mm. They're thinking of downsizing and selling the gaff, so he doesn't want to pay for new windows. Yeah. So I messaged you guys online and said, I've seen the liquid mask on your page.
Is that the stuff that you're putting on the window pane then? And then you
paint
it off after?
And one, it's really satisfying. Yeah. Really satisfying to do. And two, it's a really quick, easy way of doing it because I'm not a decorator. My dad's not a decorator. We wouldn't be there masking up perfect
and
lines.
And I presume when you're pulling that off the window, there's no residue.
Yeah, absolutely residue. Right.
It's really good. Yeah. So
I didn't even realise I'd been educated watching that video the other day. I saw that when you were peeling it off.
It's really good stuff. And I know that there's decorators and stuff that use it, but for me as not a decorator, how easy it was to apply, how quickly it solved the small problem that you've got of not painting all over your bloody windows.
Yeah,
it was win-win, so yeah, it worked really well.
I mean, obviously Dave's talked about two instances there that you can use it then. Which trade, if you had to pick a trade, which would you say is the one that would use the product the most for anybody listening or watching?
What, for the liquid tape?
Well, just for any of the products, because you must have one trade that probably uses more of the products overall than another trade. Or is it just that you've just got one's for paint and decorate, one's for a contractor, one's for...
Yes, an interesting question, because those products are in families, as you say, but they're forever evolving. Deck tape, which I think you mentioned earlier.
Deck tape, yeah. Really good. I've used that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Really
Third
good.
Product.
Really good.
I'm not exactly here to... tell you about the product, but the applications are carpentry, and once you've started using them and seeing the benefit it adds to a project protecting the deck frame, you think, well, hold on a minute, this is awesome. You could use it on sleepers or posts or cladding, battens and things like that, and that family just keeps growing.
I've seen the post tape, which is wider, being used on the back of sleepers when you're building planters and stuff like that, so it actually protects the back of it for longevity of your product and stuff. So
the one beauty, because I know obviously you're not social media savvy, but the one beauty of somebody like Dave who's used the products, like a couple of them, is he's watching other people now use the products in different environments and thinking, sleepers, never seen that before.
Oh, the amount of messages I had when I did the window video saying, what products did you use? Because they not only wanted to know what paint could be used to cover UPVC, but also then the liquid mask because of how easy it was to put on.
It's even good when you're doing wooden frame windows as well. Mm. Like, I'd never think, you know, I'd be there with, like, I don't know, some sort of tracing paper size thing and your normal masking tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which would take forever as well.
It takes ages, yeah.
If you haven't got to think about cutting in straight away, like, this is making my job
so much more
efficient.
Yeah.
There was an old chap we used to work with, a German, and he used to always talk about attribute dependency. And I was thinking, what
is so analytical, the German?
Yeah, they're like,
square box. Attribute dependency means speed.
I thought you were going to do the voice and everything.
What? Attribute dependency,
He's done it, it's all right.
Yeah,
I probably get told off for stereotyping.
Can you do that again?
But the Germans are
They're awesome engineering.
They're very analytical and efficient.
Down the line.
And it has to tick every box and all that. But he always used to talk about this attribute dependency. And to give a really simple explanation of it, you know, a knife that goes into a holster, you can either sell a knife or with a holster together. You probably pay, £5 for a knife or £12 with a holster. But you actually buy the one with the holster because it's added benefit, isn't it? You know where it's going to go. You don't lose it. And you think, yeah, that's added value. That is actually sort of flavoured our thinking. So like the scrim, instead of doing it a white, we do it an orange so you can see it. People now are depending. It's only a colour. Come on, it's not exciting. But actually, it's a little bit of changing the thinking. And I reckon we should share that more. Just look at the same thing.
That's what we did with the products. Is we put the Hive as yellow.
Yeah.
Because people kept complaining, well, I love, like, black torches because they look really nice, but I put one down, especially when a site's not lit.
You can't find it.
And you put it down, or it drops down somewhere, and you're like,
where's that gone?
And the thing was, when we changed that, the initial reaction was, oh, why would I want to buy a torch that looks like a canary? That's literally what we had. Because we'd taken two samples, an A and B sample, to Elex show in Coventry. One was black with yellow switches. The other one was Hi-Vis yellow with black switches. And we were trying to see which one was more popular. Eventually, it was the Hi-Vis yellow one. But the amount of people went, I'd never buy that. Why would I want a canary on my head? Or why would I buy this because it's Hi-Vis yellow? Yeah. And weirdly, now it's synonymous with the brands with and stuff brand, like that. Just if people were to see the orange tape on a job, they go, oh, that's...
And they probably don't even realise why they are relying on it. Like the torch, it's yellow, or the Hi-Vis.
Yeah, yeah. It's not until they go to use somebody else's it's not that
I was
colour.
About to say, is yours the only orange one?
No, there's others out there.
So I was going to say, I have seen another orange one and it didn't have your branding on it. I didn't know whether that had been, because this is a major, major retailer, I don't know whether they bought your stuff and then put their own label on it and stuff.
Which no, they've gone to China and banned it. We won't name names. We won't name names. That's normally what happens anyway, isn't it? So how old are you by this point? Because obviously you're 17. You've done the bit for 10 years. I'm not trying to you like a lady. A lady doesn't tell her age, but I'm just trying to give people perspective, because the one thing about this show is I almost think it's good when people are sort of relaying what they've done, how they fit into where they are now and what they've been doing to sort of give a time frame, because I always feel like people, especially with social media now, think everything happens like that.
It takes years,
Do you know what I mean? Whereas I look at the stuff that we've done here, and I've been here 15 years.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that wasn't just, it was consistently just chipping away all the time. So, you know, you're 17, you did the other bit for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then where are we now on the...
So Wollstrong didn't start till 2016, but I didn't launch straight into merchants. We did a lot of homework for, and obviously all the adhesive background happened 4 years before that.
Yeah.
So it's probably 20 years of knowledge. And I'll tell you one thing that's a good way to learn is make some mistakes. And that's how we learn the quickest way, because you've got to solve them and you've got to find a way around it. And we've made loads of mistakes. I'm not going to hide that.
Because that's another thing as well, is like when you're on social, some people don't show their mistakes. They're scared of getting battered for it.
Yeah.
But I always feel like to be more authentic, actually, you're never going to get everything right 100%.
Oh, every day is not a good day. And anyone who pretends it is chatting waffle. Mm.
That's, again, when it comes to a product, you're like, I'm going to be honest and give an honest review of that product. Yeah. Like Dave's given a review of that tape. Do you know what I mean? If you're given something to try out.
So, you know, you said it was 20 years in the making of experience. Again, when people are buying your product, they don't realise if your product's slightly more expensive than a competitor, you're paying. And again, when you guys get quicker and you can do something in 10 minutes that used to take you probably 3 hours, the customer doesn't realise that's what they're paying for.
Yeah, it's true.
So, okay, you're let's just say you're 30 for per se here.
Let's and say mid-40s.
we won't put years on you. So, you've started the business.
Yeah.
What was the intention then behind... Obviously, you want to solve an issue, but you know, like when you start a business, you sort of think, "Oh, I'm just starting it." But what's the future then for you guys? What are you aiming to? Are you aiming to diversify into other things? Are you aiming to just stick to what you're good at? What is the thing that you'd like to do?
Yeah, so
apart from make products that Dave will use,
just give him to you. Give him to me.
But that's another, he's road testing the product for you.
It's brilliant. Love it. And for any feedback.
Instant feedback.
Yeah.
You know, for anybody that started a brand or has a brand that listens to this, it is just like, I cannot stress to people enough, like the power of social media.
Yeah.
He's just unbelievable.
Yeah, we'll talk after the show, Fred.
I'm so behind. Well, as an individual, I've gone from an owner to an investor. Even though I still own the business. So O to I, owner to investor. And that mindset change puts the business, the employees, to the owners. So you've transferred that I've got to run the business to them. And actually they're way more creative if you've got the right people in the team.
And not mentioning your social media.
Well, social media, absolutely. And like Tom, he's just brought this together. I would never have been able to do that. And he sees it a different perspective to me. I'm looking at it and saying, absolutely, he's the right guy for it. But I think as you get older, and if I was going to encourage anyone, there's two things on what I've learned from socials is there's a lot of people out there that think you're trying to slay or discourage or take business away from someone else. It's just, you get to an age where you just don't even look at it. It's not
I'll,
there.
I'll be honest as well, because people always say to me, who's your main competitor? I don't have one.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I just make products that I love, and if people buy them, then sweet hallelujah. Absolutely. If they don't, then I haven't got a business.
I don't
so
get
I've changed, because I used to fixate on like, things and think, oh, you know. Whereas now I just...
If you bring value to someone, and through the merchant too, or the reseller, and they're adding a margin to it, for example, they might not make a lot of money out of their timber, 6x2, they're not working at a 30% margin or 25% margin. If they can add a product that's adds them another 50% GP on that bundle, you're helping them out.
Yeah.
And I don't get out of bed thinking I'm going to go and take someone else's business away. Just just solve problems and help them.
Yeah.
That's probably one of the things I enjoy most of. And I think we'll carry on doing that. But that owner to investor, when you're looking at a bigger picture, I think we're going to grow by the direction we get given back from socials that says, that product, if only it could work for something other, some other material. Could like scrim tape, could you put a line down the middle so you can match it up in the middle of the board? Because the guys on site that used to do it are old, they've left. We're bringing new guys. I don't know. You could put a little black line in the middle of that. Something different, you know. And I think that's all we're going to do is just keep innovation ahead of us.
I mean, what made you move from owner to investor? Because this, again, can be related to like a trades business. I know it's like a sort of tenuous link, but actually a lot of tradespeople, they get into having their own business. They take on guys or take on girls and they want to grow their business, but then they don't want to move off the tools, which is very difficult for them. So that's sort of like a transition that a lot of people struggle with. And then it's like, okay, I've got to do more of the admin side and stuff like that. And it's trying to transition yourself from having that control to letting go and allowing other people to do their job. So what was the intention behind that, and what was the difficulties that you faced with something like that?
I'll start with the difficulties, because it's mostly a mindset that you've actually got to change. I love my lab. I love going back into it and fiddling around and annoying everybody and leaving mess everywhere. But it's where I can get creative in something. But actually, if I got run over by a bus tomorrow, that would just stop. And well, where's the value in that? You've got to transfer this knowledge and get other people to do it. And in doing so, you can actually look and say, hold on a minute, I can see, I can improve what I'm doing myself. Because he's doing it that way. I never thought of that. This is awesome. And I think it's just sharing that. It's a difficult move. I think this year has been really tough to go from that belongs to me, I used to do that, to no, you don't. If there's a guy down in London.
A lot of you guys are very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you love, like, that's so the thing that you were weaned onto.
Yeah.
And then you've got to try and wean yourself off and trust that somebody else is going to do that.
I'm a classic example of it. I had a load of guys working for me. Yeah. Couldn't give up complete responsibility, but I couldn't do both sides of things and ended up getting rid of everyone and then moving back to a smaller team because I wasn't happy where I was.
Yeah.
I wasn't happy with the split role that I was doing, and things weren't working productively with that split role. So I made changes in my business that took me back to doing the stuff that I enjoy, and now I don't wake up miserable or not want to get out of bed anymore and stuff. So I think it's about finding what you're best at as well.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not best at relinquishing control.
I know they're two completely different sides, but I know that people that listen, obviously, they want to have a bigger team. They want to be able to do certain things. And the one main thing that I always find is people can't get off the tool.
Yeah, you're right.
But you have to find some way. I think if you ever want to be of a certain side, you have to find other people to do it. But
I remember a discussion we had a little while back, and I remember the exact quote you said to me was, "You need another you, Dave." I says,
you'll never find that.
I haven't found
one. You don't. It's
a difficult one. Sorry, go on.
You are looking for someone to replicate the standard that you achieved.
He's found you, Dave. You got it. He's found you.
That's what you're looking for, isn't it? You're looking for someone to uphold the standard that you've got to over however long you've been in the trade. And that's like what you're talking about. You're looking for someone to replicate your passion, your energy, and your standards in the work that you do. So that's the way I treat the work that I do now.
You'll never be able to clone yourself. I mean, the one thing that I always look at, I always think if I can find somebody that can do something 80% to how I want, then I think that's
close enough
enough for me. But I'm lucky. Obviously, I've sat here with G and Jack, and it's sort of like they just get left to do whatever they need to do now, because I actually realise I can't do what they do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a guy in London who owns about 25 builders merchants, and a good friend of mine does all his groundwork. So a new yard goes in or building goes up, they do it. And he was short of about £400,000, and he's like, oh shoot, this guy hasn't paid. So he rang him up, said, is there any chance you could just drop some cash around? It's like, £400,000, this is ridiculous. But that's how they do it. And he said, yeah, I'll be around in about an hour. This is in Watford. He turned up, and he turns over something like 600 million a year. So a serious guy, and he's come from nothing. And after he paid his check and handed it over and said, how are you doing? They talked a few about a few projects. We just said, is there any chance you could just give us a few minutes? He said, yeah, happily. What do you want to know? And I asked that question you said about replicating someone. He said, well, the principle I've always used is if someone can do it 70 to 80% as good as you, let them get on with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. I've always expected 100 or 120, you know?
Now, well, the other thing as well is if somebody can do something for you like that, and actually you think, well, I could earn this much money doing this while somebody else is doing this, just leave them to it. Because actually, if you can earn more there, even if you're only earning £30 more, it's still more than you doing that job at the same time.
That was an interesting lesson, because that's part of the letting go. I know it might not be perfect, but it's getting done. That's a real tough one. So I'm still learning.
Yeah. Every day is a school day. Ladies and gents, just a quick one to say a huge thank you to our new headline sponsor, CT1, the best sealants on the market, voted for by the British public. Not only that, it's made in Britain as well. So go and support a product and a brand that is made in the UK. But I just want to say to you, they've got a brand new product out, which is the BT1. It's a combination sealant and adhesive like the popular CT1, but it's perfect for keeping a hygienic environment. And it's designed to completely stop the growth of bacteria, microbes, and fungus. And not only that, this stuff is strong. Now, it's going to be available at Travis Perkins, Wicks, Jucent, and pretty much everywhere else. So there's no excuse not to go and give it a go. So we're really happy to be partnering with CT1. Moving on then, Mark. Take us back about, you know, school time. You've just left school. Take us sort of back to there and give us a brief overview of how you've come to be sat here, basically. So
feels like going back a long time.
Yeah.
So
not as long as Fred.
He's only 30, mate.
I'm knackered and old. Don't you worry.
I can't say anything now. I'm in the 40s.
Yeah. So I'm 34 now. Going back to school wise. Actually, I mean, before I left school, I did my A-levels, did 3D design, PE and IT. Like A-levels.
So you're
going
to say RE then? Like, here we go. Easy subjects, come on.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up?
That was the thing. So I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I was very much trying out all sorts of things. And after my A-levels, I went into fitness instructing. Yeah. I was a fitness instructor.
Just a quick one, because we touch on this sometimes, and I always ask everybody, and I get the same answer, but I just want somebody to go, no, actually, it was offered to me. Was anything trade-related offered to you at school?
Not remotely. So this is the thing. If we're going to go on to the topic of education and how education is done in our country, for me, school wasn't for me, and I've heard this numerous times watching this podcast.
Most people sitting in that chair will say the same thing.
Yeah,
school wasn't for us.
I'm a practical person. I've got a practical mind, and my family are just so far away from the trades. Do you know what I mean?
Is it the office jobs?
They're office. Yeah. So my brother's a lawyer. I've got family who.
So you're nicking him, and he's sticking him in jail. What a combo!
Works quite well, that. But yeah, I wasn't. I definitely didn't know what I was doing, and it was very much, oh, try this or try that and that kind of thing. So I ended up becoming a fitness instructor because I had a passion for fitness. I was teaching 8 hour classes a week, ended up starting a company with someone like very briefly, and it just didn't take off. Wasn't making the money that I wanted to be earning on a monthly basis, that kind of thing.
Did you say you were teaching 80 odd classes a week?
Eight.
Oh, I thought you said 80 odd. I was thinking, who is this guy?
I thought he said 80 year old classes.
I thought he was fit as a butcher's dog.
Next class.
Yeah, I'm teaching eight classes a week. I'm doing some PT sessions here and there. Didn't have a car at the time, cycling between every class.
He was as fit as a butcher.
Definitely the fittest I've been ever, probably, in comparison to how I am now. But so like I said, with the fitness, did that for a few years. It was for like about 4 years. So I was very much into it and really enjoyed it. I'd say it boosted my confidence. So you imagine being in front of a class, learning how to elevate your voice and all of those things.
Give us your best PT instructor. Come on, four more. Let's go.
Today's episode of Trade Legends: Fitness with Mark.
Yeah. We should do a video with him and get, you know, like the leg warmers, the 80s leg warmers on. Mr. Motivator style.
There's definitely. There'll always be a part of me that misses that because having people come to you who have varied goals, whether that be fitness related or mental health related, because they're directly related, aren't they? And having people come to you and say, oh, I'm struggling with this, struggling with that. I want to lose weight. I want to do this. Or I want to do a half marathon next year. Do you know what I mean? Not to be able to help people with that kind of thing, or be a part of that process of someone just getting out of the house and going to a fitness class. Mm. And that being the highlight of their day. You can't beat that, can you? Mm. So that was great. But it came, the point in my life that I came to from a financial standpoint, I was like, well, I'm not making enough money. I'm looking at other options
The thing is, at this time as well, there was no social media, so you couldn't have.
No.
Or was there social media at that time that you could have blasted? Well, yeah, and
there would have been, but I was definitely not aware of.
Not as a way to make money, I'd have thought.
Yeah, yeah. Like now, it's really saturated, but at one point, it's a good point
because I'm sure now that would be very much the thing. Yeah,
if you could do chippy workouts with the wood and your saws and stuff like that.
Just integrate it in there, like every other reel, So I met Andrea, who's my wife, and we were looking at getting married, buying a house and all these things, and from a financial standpoint, I needed something more steady, basically.
What is it when meeting a woman, you suddenly realise, shit, I need more money. You realise you're
not good enough as well.
Yeah, I need to dress a bit nicer, I need to sort my life out.
Like, crap, what am I going to do with my life? So, it wasn't an instantaneous thing. I wasn't like, I've always wanted to be a police officer.
If you're doing fit, I understand, obviously, you've got to be fit to be a police officer. Well, I'd expect that
we've had this conversation.
some aren't when you look at them these
There's
days.
There's plenty of police officers that can't chase someone.
But you think in your head, you think, you know, fitness, police, like.
I would say the thing for me is I've always enjoyed working with people and helping people. So that was the link for me. I saw the police as an opportunity to help people. As the years went by, I realised there was limitations on what I could do really with that. But I started off as a police community support officer. It was kind of the foot in the door just because the forces that I was looking to join weren't recruiting at the time. Mm.
Is this when they started saying you needed to have a degree?
That was after I joined.
Was it?
Yeah, after
that always amazed me. It's like,
you
know, just pick people because they can do the job.
Yeah, yeah.
What does it?
Oh, that's. I mean, that's caused a mess. That is because
you look now because some of the police now. Oh well, I can know what a chemical equation is, but I could never arrest you.
Oh, yeah, you put me in the back of my mind, right?
Oh, no, it's completely backwards because, yeah, you should be looking for those people who've got the practical skills, the communication skills, people who are just good with people.
Yeah.
Like, forget about having a degree.
It doesn't matter how many textbooks you can recite. Mm. You know, if you're going to slam somebody in the back of a mobile unit. Yeah. You know.
If you can't de-escalate a situation between people or whatever, like, you're no good.
Yeah.
You can be book smart, but it's not necessarily going to help you in a confrontational situation, is it?
Yeah.
De-escalate,
Dave, go on.
I would not be an easy man to de-escalate.
I think Dave would just have to be tasered.
Back at the bed now.
Yeah, no room for communication there. Forget
just
that.
Get him in, especially with his Stone Island jumper on. Get him in the back.
He's tried to reason with you before. It doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. He's a real man. He won't drink an IPA. So
He's had three lagers. So he's I love that. So how does it come about then? You realise you need some more money. You realise this beautiful wife that you're going to marry is going to suck you dry, and you need to get some more money. So is that the thing really? That you just want a bit more stability with life?
Yes, financial stability was a big part of it, and like I said, moving into something where I could help people as well was part of that.
So here's one then. Would you advise it for somebody? Because there's going to be people, similar situation, that might be watching this that go...
Obviously, there was a lot of risk involved going from being an employee to being self-employed. That whole life change of when you're not at work, you're not paid.
That's the biggest shock for people.
That's a big thing.
So for anyone who's not been self-employed or, you know, working in construction, things like that, going from a position where you're looked after, if you're off, you get holiday pay, you get this, that and the other, where you know as well as I do, we're there until the job's done, it has to be done. If you're not in work, you're not paid. It's a big shock factor.
I'll be honest with you, when you go from being the boss to being employed, that's a shock as well.
But I know what you're saying though, because it is one of those jobs that where you become institutionalised, like you're very much a part of that. The police family. Mm. That's how they like
the thin blue line.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, the thin blue line. Yeah, I mean, you joke about it, but like that is
no,
is that is like that, and like
he bleeds blue. I know all of them.
You don't know.
He doesn't know.
What was the craziest thing that you've ever attended?
Yes. Now we're getting into the meat stuff.
Come on.
So one of the jobs that always sticks out in my mind, and I've talked about it a few times with various people. I think I put it out on one of my reels. I just put a description out of the course of events. But basically, when I was based in Telford, actually, I attended this job at, I think it was like 5:30 in the morning. We had a call from a female saying, I think my neighbours been like come to some harm, like I've heard some screaming, things like this, and you're slowly being fed more and more information that's coming from the person that's phoning in via the control room, who are then feeding it to us. So you're being drip fed information, and you're asking questions which determine the level of risk that you're attending. So you can only know so much, can't you, from the person who's making that call. If somebody's making a phone call about what's happened next door, they have no idea of the reality of what's happened.
Yeah.
They've heard some screams. We've not really had much more information, really. As we're on the way to the job, we get updated. So I can see through the front door. Female at the bottom of the stairs, and there's blood all over her. So straight away we're thinking,
it's a murder or something.
Is this person alive? What state are they in? So obviously we're rushing there as fast as you can. Do you know what I mean? At this point,
are you blue lighting at this point?
Yes,
I'm building up the suspense.
Yeah, that's blue lighting. Blue lights are on. With this job, bearing in mind, this job's coming at 5:30. We're due to finish at 7 in the morning. Mm. We've started at 10 at night.
Well, you don't get to go
home. This is a night shift. our sergeant, thinking, this night shift's not been too bad. We haven't had too much going on. It's been quite quiet. He's sent home the people
that would deal
that would have a taser.
Yeah.
So the people on our shift that were equipped with a taser or trained to use a taser had gone.
Yeah.
So that meant that we then didn't have a taser on our shift.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got firearms officers who can be sent to the job, but they're coming from a distance. So anyway, as a shift, we all head down to this job. We get to the door. We're having to literally throw ourselves out the door to put it through, because we haven't had time to grab the kit to put the door through. That's just the way it is sometimes. One of our colleagues basically just runs through the, puts his foot through the door, comes down. Sure enough, there's a female at the bottom of the stairs, in a fetal position with a knife in her side. She's white as a sheet. Clear as day that she's dead. And so when you talk about the things that you come up, that you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, like that, that's obviously quite traumatic.
Yeah.
Straight away, we're obviously thinking, oh, where's the person who's done this? So we enter the property, having to actually go up the stairs.
Well, you're trying not to get involved in a crime scene as well at the same time. Well,
yeah, that's the thing. You're trying to preserve the scene, but also you need to establish if the offender might be in the property. Blood all upstairs, all at the walls. Like get upstairs, do a search of the property.
And just for somebody listening and watching, how old is this person that's obviously been murdered or has come to harm?
No, from memory, from memory, she was in her late 30s.
Yeah.
But this is the thing: you over time of being a police officer, you do become numb. So I'm probably explaining this job in quite a fact of the matter way, and you're
in
sat there thinking, "What on earth is this? What on earth is Mark talking about?" But I realise that because you have to become numb.
You know when we're talking about this,
yeah.
Does that bring all of that stuff back to you? Do you?
I can feel the anxiety in me right now. I don't know if you can tell, but so anyway, we've established that unfortunately this person is dead, and there's nothing we could do to save her. Like I said, she's got a knife in her side, but you're still thinking there's an offender somewhere, and they could still well have a weapon. So from that initial point. Immediately, we need to start searching the area. So we've searched the property, searched the immediate vicinity, and you start kind of moving the search out and out. Just establishing, basically, like, can we find this person? And sure enough, we did actually have some kind of description that had been passed from the neighbour of somebody leaving the property, walking away. So the fact that we had that was quite remarkable, really, to be honest. And I think that person, we're able to identify that person was registered at that address, like as in there being a male registered at that address.
Mm.
So this person could have jumped in a car, driven off, could have run off, or he could be hiding in the house. Do you know what I mean?
Any
of those things.
Yeah.
So we're searching the immediate area, and sure enough, me and my colleague, we're down one of the adjoining streets, and I see someone matching the description.
Mm.
And you imagine what's going through your mind. You're just like,
"Shit, do I tackle?
Is this person still armed in some respects? Like, what state is he in?"
But the thing that people don't realise is you don't have that. Like, and this is the same when obviously somebody unfortunately gets shot by firearms. You are making decisions in like
split seconds.
That could.
Yeah,
you know,
and you think, well, I can approach this person. Is he going to turn and be violent immediately, or is he going to be calm? Like, all these things racing through your mind, and obviously that whole fight or flight kind of things like kicks in. But you're like, well, I'm there, like, to deal with it. Let's just get on with it. So we approached him, and he was calm as anything, which is actually quite common when you come to deal with someone who's done something like this. Through dealing with lots of incidents like that, you find, they're quite calm after they've done something like that. So he tried to give us a fake name and all these things, but he fitted the description bang on. So I was like, yeah, I know this is the person. Mm. So we straight away get him into cuffs, and obviously inform him that he's under arrest.
Mm. Did he have anything else on him?
So this is the thing. So I started searching him, and
like a blade like this long or something.
Not quite as bad, but yeah. I open up the pocket in his coat pocket, yeah, and I pull out. Obviously, I've got my gloves on or whatever. I pull out this knife, got blood on it, and we later find out from a forensic standpoint that is what he's used, and the forensic report for that was just awful. Like she'd been stabbed 17 times.
But this is the thing as well with the police force is if you went to war and you endured that visual side of things and you know people come back PTSD.
Yeah.
I don't think of police like that.
Yeah.
And you're going home, you're all set to go home. Obviously you can't go home because you have to file a report to all the things that happen. So you probably didn't get home till like midday.
Yeah.
And then you've got to try and go home and switch off. And act normal with your family at home.
Yeah. There is actually quite an interesting statistic for like traumatic events that you'll see in a lifetime. Mm. So for a standard member of the public, you might experience between 6 and 7 traumatic things throughout your life, whether that be one of your friends, family, even just losing someone in your life. Like that's traumatic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Regardless of the severity, do you know what I mean? But for a police officer, they'll see between 600 and 800 traumatic things during their 30-year career. Yeah. And then when you come back to that topic of mental health, you just think, what's being done to look after these people along the way?
So is that one of the reasons then that you thought, I've got to get out of here?
Did that
subconsciously play in your mind and think, I'm not happy here?
Yeah.
I'm enduring all this stuff. Like, I need a change of scenery.
Yeah. I mean, I said to you countless times, doesn't it? I've got no shame in saying that I don't think actually I've got the resilience to deal with that stuff. Mm. But I would add on top of that, I think the way that police officers' mental health is looked after is not where it should be. And there is a lot of work.
I know that.
There's a lot of work that needs to be done on that. Mm. And my wife and my family and friends, they saw the changes in me and how there were times.
You'll know because you're in the force. But from what I understand, there's quite a high divorce rate with like people, police. Quite a high divorce rate.
Work and stuff like that can't be easy. You're going to be passing ships and... You're never going to be able to plan a sort of social life around it and stuff, are you?
Obviously being married, like the decision was to leave. What wasn't just from my experience; it was also how it was impacting family life. It was impacting. So, Andrea,
have you got any kids as well?
I've got two kids. Yeah, two-year-old and a 5-year-old.
And so it's impacting as well. Then how you are when you are at home.
That's it.
So despite the shift work and despite the hours and all that and.
Well, the other thing as well is I'm sure if you went out to something like an RTA, road traffic accident, and there was two young kids in the back, you're going to be looking at those kids if they've passed away thinking, well, what happens if I pass away? If that was my kid, you know, and it's boom all the time.
Yeah. Well, I dealt with some child fatalities. I won't go into it because...
Graphic.
I struggle to talk about it, if I'm honest. Mm. But that... these things stick with you for life, don't they? And... Yeah. Yeah, you get to the point where you're like...
But to be fair, obviously the stuff you went through, was it this time last year?
Yeah.
So this time last year, actually, it's probably a good thing that you're working with Dave, because Dave obviously has been through that bit and probably now he's like, actually, I don't worry about shit like I used to.
Yeah.
Is it frowned upon when you leave the police force? Because... Most people are lifers, aren't they? Let's be realistic.
I can tell you about the reactions that I had. Like, it was really, really mixed. The people that really knew me and our close mates and people that are like friends for life kind of thing, people that I still spend time with now, they understood it and they were like, when I came out with the news that I was going to be leaving, they were like, of course you are. Like, you you clocked out of this job mentally a long time ago. Like they knew that it wasn't right for me anymore.
Yeah, you'd had your fill. You knew that it wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, they knew how stressed I was. They knew how much I was struggling with things. They knew what I felt about the job. Mm. So it just made sense. But then the people who didn't really know me, they're like, Mark, what? Like they actually sat down next to me and they go, Mark, like, what are you doing? But this is one of the things that bugged me in the police, because I mean, this must be happening in all sorts of jobs, but very much so in the police. You'd have most officers, you just moan day in, day out. Mm. And the ones who are just like moaning, like.
But that's not good for you either, because if you go to work and you've got to moan about, pension's crap, or the equipment we got's rubbish, or I can't believe I've had to do this other shift. That's not good for you either.
No.
Get something that you enjoy getting up for in the morning. And if it's not the right job,
get out of there. But that's what I'd said to people when the people that were shocked that I was leaving, like leaving the security of having that, the same money each month, the same money each year. That's what I said to them. I was like,
Some things are more important than that.
Make sense. Like, and like, I need to go and do something else that I'm actually going to enjoy.
You see why I like getting people on now, because obviously you're talking about like all the experience that you've got to create a brand, and then you going, well, actually, I had all that experience, and I'll give it all up.
Well, that's it.
And everybody's dealing, like everybody that we have on here, like everybody's story. There's some fascinating stories of like how people came to be where they are now, and stuff like that. Where I listen to you two, and I'm like, actually, like, you know.
I fully respect that. Thanks for sharing it. It's good.
But I'm a big believer in the fact that you can change your career at any point.
So, ladies and gents, I want to say a big, big thank you to one of our show sponsors, which is Tradify. Now, most of you will probably already have heard of Tradify, and it's an app that will help you streamline your business. It will save you time, invoicing, quotes, all that sort of thing. It's all in there. So if you want to spend more time on the tools and less time doing the paperwork, which, frankly, nobody likes doing paperwork, Tradify is the app for you. Now, if you click this link above, you're going to get yourself a 14-day free trial. And because we are confident, just as much as Tradify are, you don't even need to enter any payment details to get that free trial. But if you enter code TRADELEGENDS, you'll get a massive 50% off for the first 3 months when you subscribe. So stop wasting your time and get back on the tools and save yourself a bit of time in the process and some money.
When I handed my notice in, I had a job lined up.
Mm.
I was due to not with Dave. I was due to start with a carpentry business that I won't name because it's probably
because they're on Instagram.
Because they're on Instagram YouTube. And they may see this. Mm. 2 weeks after leaving the place, I was due to start with that carpentry business doing cabinetry and
What happened with that?
3 days before I was due to start,
cancelled it.
Sent me a WhatsApp message at 11:30 in the evening saying can't take you on. So the thing is, I'd been to the workshop. I'd met this person in person.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I'd had conversations on the phone.
Carpentry by Sam.
That's it, yeah.
Sam, peace out.
Sorry, mate. Like you say, there's always going to be a reason. There's another side to the story. That my frustration was...
It was so close from
man to man. I'm like, you don't need to give me full details. Like, but he just said due to personal circumstances, and I was just like, what a cop out. You could give me something.
Some people, and this is another thing as well. Going back to school, people don't learn how to have a difficult conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
Like I always just think if you're honest with somebody and people can't handle that, that's not my issue. Do you know what I mean? But I'll be honest with you and say, look, I can't take you on because I've just lost this contract or this work hasn't come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if there's anything in the future, you know, and sorry, it's so close to you starting.
I mean, as angry as I was, looking back on it now and through conversations I've had with various people in the trade industry,
it's quite common though.
A lot of people said to me, actually, he doesn't know you anything. And you're going into an industry where that kind of thing can happen. Mm. Like, I mean, that's the thing. So,
sorry if you're watching.
That's it. Yeah. That was the end of that. But it then meant that I'd forked out money for childcare,
which isn't cheap.
Which is a lot of money.
which is like a second mortgage.
That's it. Yeah. And I was looking at, yeah, I'm looking
what,
at
what's the miss, what's, okay, what's the missus saying to you at this
yeah,
point?
So at this point, Andrea...
I'm leaving you. That's it. Forget it. Go back to the police, you idiot.
Can't believe
you. Did she, okay, this is a good question. Did she ever say to you at any point, like, why are you leaving? Like, or did she see the same in you as that some of the other people saw where you were done? Did she see that? Or was she saying to you, get out?
Oh, the get out?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what I think I've alluded to it earlier. Like, it wasn't just my decision. It was a decision as a family, a decision like that came from friends that had noticed that I wasn't happy. Do you know what I mean? There's various parts to it, and family life was a big thing, definitely. So yeah, when it came to that point of, oh, you haven't got a job, extremely stressful from a financial standpoint, you just thought, well, what are we going to do then?
Go and bug Dave.
Go and bug Dave.
So what was the time frame then for you getting told no to hunting Dave on the squat rack?
Just over a year.
Was it?
So I knew that I was going to have to accept that I was going to be a stay-at-home dad predominantly because we couldn't be paying for childcare. Yeah. So essentially... We worked out from a financial standpoint, we could afford 2 days a week for the childminder. So my youngest was going to the childminder 2 days a week, and I could teach myself carpentry 2 days a week. Mm. And that was what I was doing. So between the 2 days and evenings or bits on the weekend, I would like be trying to do bits on my own house or for friends or family. And that was the start of me really like having lots of time to focus on the carpentry, but also had lots of time to build my social media.
Yeah.
I should probably take it back a bit slightly actually from the social media aspect, because when I first started my Instagram page, it was off the back of when I was using my personal Instagram page to look at people within the trade industry and just see what they're doing and learn bits. And then I started the Bobby to Chippy thing, and I was like, well, this is a great opportunity to showcase my journey from one career to another. I thought, well, this is quite unique, like a police officer to a carpenter, like Bobby to Chippy, this works. So are you using that as a platform just to show my progress in that sense? And once that got going, I realised actually I was developing a network with people like Dave, who are experienced tradespeople, and I was able to ask them questions. And so I was teaching myself how to do various things on my own house, and then firing people questions. And then in amongst that, I was messaging people saying, "Oh, would you be interested in taking someone on full time?" Mm. And that was off the back of, again, speaking to people like Dave, and various other trades, who he said to me, at your age, being 34, if you're going to go and do an apprenticeship and do a college course, actually that's not going to be that beneficial. Mm. You're better off just doing the job day in, day out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Throwing in the deep end is the way to do it.
Yeah. I don't know what your opinion on a college course, like for someone my age.
Pointless.
Just not.
Absolutely
like,
pointless. You won't learn anything that you won't learn in five minutes.
I think any age, I think you're going to, watching other people that have done a job for 30 years and absorbing little tidbits of information, way better than ever going to college.
Yeah.
That's my personal view. And that is across anything, office work, anything. The only time I feel like you should be stuck in college is if you're studying law or you're becoming a doctor and doing medicine.
Yeah. But not only that as well, because obviously when you've got, like I've had apprentices that have gone through the college stage and they're great and all that, but what I'd expect out of Mark as a 34-year-old man would be more than them anyway, because he's got life experience, he's got, you know, a bit of common sense, he's spent
you
a
hope.
Year.
Well, yeah, exactly. Sorry, Mark.
You do hope, because it's something that can't be taught. But, you know, he's then spent a year doing 2 days a week, teaching himself carpentry and doing bits and watching everyone's social media and, you know, doing all those things to try and give himself the best sort of starting position. And then...
And that's a good thing from his perspective, because some people would have just sat there and waited for a job.
I know, he fully integrated himself into the, you know, the trades community online and stuff as well, with his with his page and all that. And obviously, it's a great community. You know what it's like. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's there. Mm. There's loads of people to talk to. He's probably made some brilliant friends out of it. Yeah. And from it, he's ended up with a job. Mm. Do you know what I mean? All from having a bit of, you know, persistence and, or stalk me to the gym.
Sierra Roscoe, Charlie Tango, he's in. He's in. Go, go, go. It comes in with six lads through the door. Yes, yeah.
It came at a good time for me as well, because obviously, like, when we first met in the gym, at that time, I actually didn't have any availability for him or whatever. And it was then through the fact that my apprentice at the time was finishing his course and he decided that he actually wanted to leave construction.
Yeah.
And actually he's gone.
Is that Brando?
Yeah, Brando. And he's actually gone into a public service job, ironically.
Yeah. So he's gone into the police.
Yeah. He's now training to be a paramedic.
You're like,
sucker. Enjoy.
He's now training to be a paramedic because basically the lifestyle and the physical elements of it he was struggling with, and also I could tell that when you go from being an apprentice to being qualified, the transition to being looked after
This is the thing when you're young. This is why I say, if you can be around people all the time, when you suddenly become qualified and you're young, oh shit, I'm out in the wild on my own. Yeah. And if you're very young, it's quite daunting.
Yeah, it's 18 years old. And the expectations then from you as being qualified, okay.
So you're going to give it 17 with a scaffolding.
You're going to get paid more money, but I expect more from you. And then there's also the element of, you're not going to get looked after if you're off work. Yeah, you're not going to get looked after if you're ill. You're not going to be given the sort of...
Also, you don't get the leeway if you do.
Exactly.
That's it.
That's it. But, you know, we partnered on great times. Brandon's a brilliant lad. Mm. We still chat now. He's absolutely fantastic.
He was your videographer.
He was my videographer.
That's what I do. That's his job, mate.
Get my angles.
It was just purely for personal reasons for himself. I'd have loved it if he'd stayed with me, because he was a really good lad. Mm. Personal reasons for himself. He needed something different. And, you know, we parted on the best of times.
Some people as well want that stability. Mm. Like a bit like you thinking, well, I've got a job that I love, but I need to pay the bills.
The physicality took its toll on him as well. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, that's something.
I'm not surprised. Porcelain slabs and all the rest of it.
Well, that's it. And, you know, he was a, you know, quite a small guy and all that. And, you know, it obviously does take its toll on you. It is brutal on you sometimes, you know, physically what we do. And that can be overlooked sometimes, especially by some of us who have been doing it for so long. Yeah. You don't really realize it. Like, I mean, you know, Mark's 6'6". And I still see him sometimes absolutely blowing, right?
Well, this is the thing.
Because you build up an endurance for it, doing it all these years. And then you ask someone who's 34 and 6'6" to do it, and all of a sudden it's like, oh. And I'm like, why ain't he filled that barra? It's like, oh, full on. You're going to put a full load in it. And you
don't call yourself a fitness fanatic.
Well, it's one of these things. To be able to do it all day, every day, it does take its toll on your body. And that's the sort of thing you can't learn in a gym.
Yeah.
And you can't learn that anywhere else other than from doing it every day. And I'd say, look, strength-wise and endurance-wise and all that, you've noticed since even about the 3 months you've been working with me, the change in you physically and your energy and things like that. And
he's knackered now. Don't worry, Dad.
What time is it? I should be going to bed now.
I'm tapping out.
But no, so like, it came at a good time for me, because I then, knowing that Mark had asked me previously for work, and I wanted to use my social media to find the right person for the job. So I put a message out saying,
Britain's next apprentice. That's what you should do.
Yeah. I just put a message out on my Instagram saying, you know, local lads, this is what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a kid again to be an apprentice. Mm. I'm looking for someone of our own age, has to be able to drive, all these things. Because I do so much extracurricular stuff, I call it now, with, you know, going off and doing social media days here and filming and working with brands and all that. I need someone who can, one, get themselves to and from work.
Yeah.
And two,
get out of bed,
trustworthy. Trustworthy that I can leave to complete a task, and I'll only ever ask someone to do something they're capable of, but they have to be also able to do it without me there, without me watching over them. And I know that it's going to be done to a certain standard when I'm not there. And you get that from a guy of Mark's age, where you might not get that from every 17, 18 year old. So I put out a message, Mark responded, as did many people. Mark gave me the biggest bribe.
Take me on or end up in the nick.
I know your history.
Yeah, I've got your web browser, Dave, and it doesn't look good, bruv. Well,
we had a chat about it, so I arranged to meet him, and I think I was fairly honest with how things are.
Fairly.
I don't know, coppers.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you better be out.
So, I definitely didn't paint a rosy picture of what life would be like. I was very realistic because that's what I'm like. I'm a black and white guy anyway. Mm. I mean, you describe it from your point of view.
So Dave doesn't beat around the bush. Yeah. Just
straight up.
You're just like, day in, day out, it's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. No.
You will cry and I will break you.
I will make you cry.
But you will love it.
Yes, you will love it.
Right, so this part of the show, we're going to go to what we call, it's a bit of a, like a Jerry Springer final. Wow, I couldn't get my teeth in. Paid enough for these. Can't get them in.
Send them back.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Turkey!
But, yeah, we sort of just, any advice you want to give, or if you want to plug a new product, or you want to tell us something that's coming down the pipeline, or what to watch out for, or some, you want to drop some knowledge on all of us, mere mortals here, this is sort of like a little time to sort of do that. So we'll start with you. No pressure. But
it's interesting, actually, reflecting on our journeys. And I've been very lucky because, and I've put it out there, my wife is a farmer.
Yeah.
And when I come home from work and I'm like, oh, can you believe all this formulation I've done? It's a complete waste of time. It's got
farming is one of the toughest jobs. Yeah.
And she turns to me and says, what are you complaining about?
I've been up since five.
We've ploughed 200 acres back in the ground because it's got black wheat in it or some weed or something. What are you complaining about? And you go, whoa, okay. It just brings in that perspective.
And I'm trying to have a moan! Leave me alone!
And it's not done in a horrible way. It's just get real.
Farming's 24 hours, seven days a week, 365. It is, yeah.
So I've got a bit of that coming through, and my children, my eldest is in the business now, and she's got both sides. She's got that.
Is she in the farming business?
No, she's in the Wollstone. So she's got the grunt and the go, but also she gets it into perspective because things go wrong.
Mm.
It's like, okay, that's a lesson I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know? So share that. Just keep things into perspective. I don't know what else exactly on reflecting on your journeys, but. Not everybody who wanders through life is lost, are they? Because, like, you would have never known it. Had you planned it, you still wouldn't have been there, would you?
No.
That same journey.
No.
So take it as it comes a little bit.
You're like the Messiah, Dave. You
that's found very
it.
Philosophical, that is.
I'm going to have to get you dressed up like the Messiah.
You'll be like, and cut.
Children of the light, come to me.
Stop asking me for a job.
You're going to have to get that as a thumbnail. Yeah.
Stop coming to my DMs
and
pestering me.
So what have you got for us then?
Pearl of wisdom, come on.
Come on.
No, well, just, well you don't it's get true. Don't get as philosophical as that.
No, sorry, okay. Fred's back out.
Fred's, no, no, it's good.
Don't chase join your dreams.
That's a good one.
No, genuinely, going back to what I've said about the fact that you can change your career at any point in your life, if you're determined enough and passionate enough, why not?
Yeah. If somebody this is a question for you then. If somebody has said to you just before you became a police officer, you're doing your fitness thing, right? And obviously if you look like fitness to police to trade, okay, you can sort of see it. If somebody had said to you when you were doing your burpees and whatever else and your star jumps, you're gonna be a carpenter in 8 years' time.
Yeah.
What would you have said?
You're mad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's another thing that I want to get across to.
But is it? I think part of it is a journey of confidence as well. Mm. So I've sort of not always been the most confident person.
Yeah.
And you might think, well, that doesn't make sense. You were teaching a fitness class in front of a group of 30 people.
You've got to be confident in front of Lycra.
You've got to be confident to do that. But it's confidence in a different way and backing yourself that you can do something. So for me, coming into the trade, there's often times when I'm doing something on site and Dave's like, Mark, like I can actually see you worrying about doing that or being too careful. Just get on with it.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Yeah. No, that's exactly
don't it. Measure it, just
that is quite often what happens.
That's exactly it.
Like not measuring it.
I did it by eye.
A good example would be cutting a block down. Dave will go, Mark, it's not joinery. Like, I want it 220 mil. It's not joinery.
Yeah.
So, it's so having a longer mortar over end. It doesn't matter if it's 250.
Because you're not going to see
it.
Don't worry.
Just get it cut.
Like, yeah. Forget about your, like, fine. Like, yes, you're into carpentry. That's what you want to do. But I'm learning the processes of how things are done throughout all sorts of areas of construction. And that, I mean, that's the benefit of working with Dave, because you do everything, don't you? Like, let's be honest, and just do everything. The other thing is, though, people say it all the time, but if you're not doing something that you love, like, and I know it sounds...
It's cliche, but it's true.
I know it's cliche, but do something about it. Like, if you're not happy, do something. Like,
it's never too late, yeah.
You've got to do something about it. You can't go about every single day of life just moaning and thinking, this is...
I'll try. This is, the missus might disagree. Yeah.
Like, if you're waking up and you're looking ahead of the day and thinking this is awful, rather than getting to the end of the day and thinking, today's been awful.
Yeah.
Like,
when I watch the news, I'm just lucky to wake up and breathe. That's the thing that I always think, because I don't even turn the TV on
sometimes.
Out
now,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So.
That's it.
Enjoy yourselves. Well done, anyway, on your success, and also your changing your career.
Yeah,
and ending up with the Elwood.
Good old Elwood.
So but thank you very much for coming on.
Cheers.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate your time.
So thanks for having me back.
No worries.